Twitter account. I have an iPad Pro right here. So I really appreciate technology, and in fact, I've been very convicted in a lot of ways that I've been using technology in preparing for this class. And it's made me rethink how dependent I've become on it, and ways of weaning myself off of it in some way. But I want to start now going back to the Garden of Eden and back to the temple. So God creates man in his own image and places him in the garden. Now, when we think of the garden, there's a couple things we need to think about. First, the garden is not merely just a garden. It is also God's temple. It's the place where God's presence dwells. The prophets later will talk about the mountain in the Garden of Eden, where God's temple is. We actually see this throughout the whole Old Testament in some ways. Think of Noah's Ark. All the animals and the plants are on Noah's Ark. It's actually shaped after Hittite temple design. I know we normally think of the Ark looking like this, but the reality is, I think, that the Ark is just a big box and is not maintained and floating. It's not floating in the water because of great technology, so to speak. It's floating in the water because God is upholding it and keeping it in the water. But it's actually the measurements fit into what Hittite temple design was at the time. So the Ark, in some ways, is a giant floating temple where God is preserving his people and the creation. And then you see the temple itself. The temple is filled with imagery of fruits and bulls and animal imagery and plant imagery. And I've talked about this before. What's the image going into, what is stitched onto the curtains going into the Holy of Holies in the temple? But the angels, just like the angels that protect the Garden of Eden and can prevent Adam and Eve from going in, the priests pass through between the angels and enter back into the garden, so to speak, where God's presence is. So the idea of temple and garden are tied together intricately in the Old Testament. But Adam and Eve are called, there's two parts to their mandate that they are given. First, they are called to maintain the garden. And so they are called to work at it, or work it, and they are called to keep it in maintaining the garden. Now, the idea of keep it, which most of your translations, if you have the ESV, actually the idea of keep it is to guard it. So they are called to work it and to guard it. In some ways, we can think of your garden, and so you're trimming your trees and you're putting new plants in and forming the garden, but you're also having to guard the garden from the weeds that are coming in. I spent a great deal amount of time this summer taking poke weeds out of my garden, and that get to 8 feet tall, and I literally took about 100 of those weeds out of my garden. It was quite a lot of work. Anyways, but more than anything, it's not just the weeds, really, that God is concerned about. God is already concerned, I think, that there is already an enemy that wants to invade the garden. And we quickly see that in Genesis 3 with the serpent that comes into the garden. So God has called Adam to keep the garden, to maintain it, and he's also calling them to guard it. The second part of the mandate is that he has called, Adam and Eve are called to spread the garden. They are told to have dominion over the earth and to multiply. So they and their children are called to go throughout the earth and have dominion over it. In essence, what they're doing is spreading the garden throughout the earth. Well, not just spreading the garden per se, but the idea here is because it's the garden temple, they're spreading God's presence throughout the earth. Remember, they're created in God's image. The illustration I like to use best is Think back to Egypt, and if you traveled around Egypt, you would see the images of Pharaoh throughout the land. And why does Pharaoh put his image there? Because he's marking off the territory that he ruled over. And we actually saw this in Iraq with Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein's picture was everywhere because he's saying, this is the territory that I rule, this is the territory I own. Well, in a similar way, but in a more gracious and way, God is doing the same thing with his image. He's calling Adam and Eve to spread, to multiply, and to go throughout the earth and spread God's image throughout the whole creation, sort of demarking what God's territory is. All right, that was a lot in 2 seconds. But so we think of, usually this whole notion of having dominion and multiplying throughout the earth is called the cultural mandate. How many people have heard that term, cultural mandate? All right. While I think culture is involved in that, I think that's a bit of a misnomer in the sense that the goal isn't to develop culture. The goal is to spread God's image throughout the world and God's presence throughout the world. But how do we do that? How does that happen? It happens through developing culture, and also, I think, within this, technology. I think that technology, well, in one way, technology is part of culture, but in some ways, it's also sort of two planets that are revolving around each other, affecting each other over and over again. So culture might produce certain types of technology in it, and sometimes the technology that we develop also produces new kinds of culture. I mean, how much have our iPhones changed how we do things and how we interact in the world? How has it changed the culture in a lot of ways? How much has television changed the culture? Or the fact that we can get around the world in, move from place to place in an hour. So presidential elections, for instance, it would take weeks to find out who actually got elected, when our country first started. And now, in minutes, we can have update on exit polling from each place. So technology has really changed our culture. And then culture also affects our technology. So those two are, but I think the ultimate goal that God had for technology and for culture was that we use that as part of our mission to spread so that people know who God is and that God's presence is spread and known throughout the world. So, I don't know, does that make sense? Any questions on that? Okay. And I think this ties up with the gospel too. Think of it in terms of the gospel. We are called to have dominion, and we are called to multiply. What is the Great Commission? The Great Commission is the fulfillment of this mandate. We are called to make disciples of all men. And what happens in Acts 1? In Acts 1, Jesus sends forth his army, so to speak, armed with the gospel, into the uttermost parts of the earth. So the Great Commission is the fulfillment of the garden. Or of this mandate to spread the garden. And we see that in the final fulfillment, too, in Revelation 22. What do we see? We see a city that is also a garden. We see the city garden. This whole world is filled with the city garden, so to speak. I just totally lost my train of thought. Just a second. So I want to talk about these sort of three principles. Oh, yeah, here's the other point I was making. So in the gospel, we see that we are supposed to spread the garden, but also we continually maintain the garden, too. We are called to spiritual warfare. To guard the garden, guard God's temple, God's people. And we are also called to take care of one another and maintain the garden. So both of these are present, both of these mandates are present in the church today. So that comes then to the question of how do we interact with culture and how do we interact, you know, with technology? Well, both of these principles are part of that. We, in our evaluation and our use of culture and technology, we have to be willing to maintain and keep the garden and be on guard, so to speak. And we also have to be able to use that technology and interact with culture in ways that spread the garden and spread the gospel. And I think, well, I mean, there's one thing that we don't think about very much is the idea that we have an enemy. Well, there's two things that I want to think about here. First of all, that we have an enemy that wants to undermine us at every turn. And so, I mean, I think it's really important then that if we have this enemy that wants to undermine us, that he's going to use the culture, he's going to use technology, all these things to try and undermine the message, to undermine what we, what God has called us to do. And so we have to be really careful in evaluating how we use technology and so forth. In fact, I thought about this morning, too late to do this, but sort of a Screwtape Letters sort of thing, and actually thinking of, you know, what would Screwtape say to Wormwood in terms of how we use technology today. And if everybody remembers C.S. Lewis, and these two demons are talking to each other, communicating with one another, and how they're undermining Christians and so forth. And so I think we have to be really aware of that idea. But the second part is that we've fallen, and remember, God has given everything under our feet, so to speak. He's put the whole culture under us and given it to rule, all the animals and the earth and so forth. But we've fallen. And in our fall, all that we rule over, too, becomes corrupted. The creation So just as a bad ruler will corrupt his own people, so we too, as sort of God's co-regents that he has put in, he's put us in charge, we bring about corruption to the culture and to technology and to the whole creation. So remember what Romans 8 says, that the whole creation is waiting for the sons of men to be revealed, to be redeemed. And they're groaning because of the corruption and the futility that they feel. And so the whole creation, including culture and all these things, are waiting for the redemption of men and for redemption because of the corruption that happens. All right, so let's look at a couple things. First of all, the idea that we replace God with technology. And so if we go back to the garden again and the fall, Adam and Eve fall, what's the first thing that they do? They what? They make clothes. Right, so here we have what are clothing but technology, in a sense. but I want to think about what Adam and Eve are going through here. And I think normally we think about them sewing some fig leaves together and covering over their naughty bits, so to speak. But I think there's something more and something greater going on here. Because they've sort of been under under the umbrella of God's protection in the garden, right? And suddenly this relationship is broken. And that umbrella of protection that they feel is gone. And so now they feel their nakedness, In part because of shame, certainly, but also in part because they don't feel protected anymore. They don't feel safe. And so the first thing they do is they try and find something to cover themselves up, to protect themselves. And so the clothing isn't just about covering up their naked parts, so to speak, but it's about protecting themselves and covering themselves, giving themselves shelter, in a way. So they invent a technology out of necessity, because they do need to be protected, but in a way to replace God, what they lost when God, they were separated from God. Of course, God also then brings them the skins, and so there's this whole redemption idea here that God is going to fend for them, but and he is going to cover them still, even though they are separated in this way because of sin. But that covering comes at a cost, the cost of blood and the death of the animal. We also see this with Cain. All right, so Cain kills Abel, and he's terrified. And he says he's terrified because he's no longer in God's presence. And he believes that they're going to kill him, right? So God puts a mark on him, and he says, oh, they're not going to kill you. But he's more outside of God's presence than Adam and Eve were. And what's the first thing that he goes and does, other than having children? He goes and he builds a city, another form of technology here. Why build a city? For somebody that feels unprotected, what does a city offer? The city offers walls and protection, and it's a way of, once again, that he's replacing God. He's looking for something to give him what God gave him before. And do we do that with technology ourselves? I mean, I think this is one of the things that we need to, you know, do we, oh, Jonathan Edwards actually has this sermon where he is criticizing the people for trusting in their gates. Now, at this time, he was living on the frontier, and people were concerned about Indian attacks. And so they have their gates to protect their houses, which is fine. He's not saying you shouldn't have your gates, but they were putting all, he was concerned that they were putting all their hopes and their their security in the gate itself. And so while he's not saying that we shouldn't have a gate and so forth, he's saying, what are we placing our hopes in? What are we placing our dreams in, so forth? And I think, you know, we do this all the time, probably. We're trusting in our future with our 401k, which is another form of technology. There's all kinds of things that we put our trust in. And so it's not that we shouldn't have these things, but it's, do we go back to God and say thank you for these things? Do we go back to him and say thank you for providing these things? Do we look at God as being the one that provides all these things? So I think this is an important principle in how we evaluate technology. And there's this really interesting passage here in Genesis 4. So if there's any questions, just raise your hand. And, so, you know, Cain kills Abel, and then he starts to have his own children. And now we have the two lines. We have Cain's line and we have Seth's line. And within Cain's line, we have this advent of technology. And so Lamech, who is Cain's grandson, I think, he took two wives. One was named Ada and the other Zillah. And Ada bore Jabal, who was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. So there's more technology. His brother's name was Jubal, And he was the father of all those who played a lyre and a pipe. And then there's Zillah, who also bore Tubal-Cain. And he was the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron. All right, so we have Lamech's line, or Cain's line through Lamech. And in Lamech's children, we have all this technology that's built. But Cain's line, I mean, Lamech ends up turning out to be awful, and he wants to avenge himself sevenfold for what Cain had done, and will kill seven men because of it. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. And so Lamech's line is born into violence, and then that's what we see when we get into the Noah story, that the whole world out of Cain's line is filled with violence. And then we have Seth's line. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and called his name Seth. For she said, God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. To Seth was born a son, and he called his name Enosh. And at that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So all we get is this brief line about Seth's line, that Seth's line, they begin to worship God. So on one hand, the idea here, I think, is not that technology is bad, but technology is not the end of itself. And that because of sin and corruption, those things aren't going to save you. I mean, there's a lot of people in the world that believe technology is going to save the world, right? We hear that all the time. And but I think in this passage, we can see that despite all these great inventions, music and livestock and instruments of bronze and iron, it still ends in violence. But what do we see in Cain's line? Cain's line is what is supposed to be the fulfillment of God's image here, that they call upon the name of the Lord, that they're worshiping God. All right. All right, so let's move on to the second, or the next idea, becoming what we worship. And I got this idea from, there's a book by Greg Beale called Becoming What We Worship. And and he argues that in Isaiah, the description that's given to talk about Israel is a description or what he wants for Israel is also the description of idols. But first of all, let's talk about idols for a second here, and idolatry. So men would craft the idol, an image of the god that they worshiped, right? So it really, in a way, idols are a form of technology. They are a means for people to communicate to their god. So they believed in somehow that their god's presence was in that idol, and that they communicate to their god through the image that they had created. it was an early form of FaceTime. No, I'm just kidding. So Isaiah describes then what, or God tells Isaiah in his call in Isaiah 6. And he said, go and say to the people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. To make the heart of the people dull, and their ears heavy, and their blind eyes. Lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed. So in other words, God is calling them and saying that they are not going to hear, not going to understand, they're not going to see. And Isaiah is saying, and he repeats over what the idols are like in several passages, but Isaiah 44, 18 is one of those. And they know not, and they do not discern, for they have, he has shut their eyes so that they cannot see, and their hearts so that they cannot understand. Oh. So he has similar descriptions then for the idols. And the idols are made of wood, they're made of gold, they're made of silver. They can't see, they can't understand, they can't speak, they can't do anything. And you are becoming like that. In part, I think this is, and this is a principle I think is really important for us to understand, is that when Adam and Eve follow the serpent, when they follow Satan in the Garden of Eden, God actually gives mankind over to the devil. All right, Israel, this happened to Israel all the time in the Old Testament. They would follow the gods of the other nations, and so God's punishment to them would be that he would hand them over to the other nations, and they would become like those other nations, right? God is doing the same thing here. He says, you're following the idols. You're listening to the idols. You have these idols, and you're not listening to God anymore. So I'm going to make you like the idols. You're not going to see God. You're not going to hear God. You're not going to understand God. And in some ways, I think that that happens today, too. Now, obviously, we're not creating idols and putting them on our shelves that we're, you know, very clearly, you know, we don't have idols of Molech or Baal or anything like that on our shelf or in our house. We don't have household gods in that way. But what do we worship? What do we spend the most time doing? What do we, you know, in some ways I've seen, have we set up shrines to our technology? How much time do we spend with our technology versus how much time do we spend with God? What do we listen to? What do we, all these things. And in some ways we are becoming like that. You know, a lot of the reports are that our brain chemistry is changing the more we stare at screens all the time. And the shallowness of the information that we get over these screens is making us shallow. It makes our mind unable to hold attention. It stunts our relationships with other people. So in a way, the more we become engrossed with technology, the more we become like that technology in some ways. Just food for thought. You know, and one of the things I want, you know, everybody has to evaluate on their own how much they use technology and what's good for them and all these sorts of things. I'm not gonna lay down like hard, fast rules here, but I just want us to think about these things and how we use our technology. But you know, the real problem with idolatry in forming these idols, I think, and this isn't something that's already talked about a lot, is when we worship idols, we're denying the fact that we are the image of God. So God criticizes idolatry in the Old Testament in part because these gods can't even make their own images. All right? They require man to craft the images of themselves, right? And these images can't even talk or walk or do anything. They're silent. They don't understand. They can't communicate. They can't move on their own. So the gods of the Old Testament are meaningless and worthless because they can't even create images that can do anything. And I think that's part of what Paul's addressing in Acts 17 when he speaks to... in Athens. And he says, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands, as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. The reason that God doesn't want graven images, the reason that he doesn't need those, is because he has created his own images. Us. And when we worship other things, we are neglecting the call that we have as God's image. I like to think about it this way, is that the images that God has created are not intended to be worshipped. So God isn't, we're not called to be worshipped, but instead, God's images are called to worship, and they're called to worship God. That is their intention, that is the purpose that we have. So when we are worshiping other things, when we are entrapped by other things, enslaved to other things, we're not fulfilling our duty as God's image. We are neglecting that idea, and we're not worshiping God and not doing the mission that what he has called us, which gets into my third point, that we get distracted from our mission. So what did I say in the beginning? That we have a mandate to maintain the garden, and we have a mandate to spread the garden, right? And those are what we find in the gospel. We are spread the gospel through the Great Commission, and we are supposed to take care of one another and maintain the garden. But we get distracted from that mission all the time. I mean, how often don't I think about what God has called me to do? How often don't I ask, God, what do you want me to do today? But, you know, the first thing I pick up is my phone in the morning, and I check my Twitter feed, or I check the weather, or I check the score on the ESPN app. Am I so distracted now that I don't even ask God what he has called me to do? Our technology is continually distracting us and keeping us from thinking about these things. One of the things I want to talk about later is the fact that we just don't have silence anymore, that we don't even take time to think and to review our own lives and to evaluate and to meditate on God's word. You know, I think I have 53 podcasts in my feed right now. And I realized I was listening to, you know, well, I was driving a lot, so, or even on my walks, I was listening to podcasts, and my ears were always filled with something. Not listening for God's word, not listening for God's call, not evaluating what God has called me to do. So we're constantly distracted from what God has called us to do. And I think there's a couple examples here. Noah. So Noah's name was about, let me try and get this right here. All right, he called his name Noah, saying, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, and one shall bring relief from our work and from the painful toil of our hands. All right, so one of the things I didn't talk about was that in the fall, Adam and Eve are cursed. All right, so we are called to have dominion over the earth, and we are called to multiply. The curse given to Adam and Eve make those both difficult. Now childbirth, multiplying has become painful. The earth now isn't dominated as easily. It's now by the sweat of your brow, right? And so this is part of what is Lamech is complaining here. And Noah is going to bring about a refreshing of this. Noah, the whole idea of Noah here is that there's a recreation going on. And that Noah is going to, in a way, bring back the Garden of Eden. And so the Garden of Eden is the ark. And Noah is going to go forth from the ark and spread the garden again. But almost immediately after they settle down, and Noah fails and gets drunk. And so wine, of course, is another form of technology, right? It's crafted. And... and he neglects his duty, and because he is drunk, his son comes in and sees his mother's nakedness. Now, that doesn't sound, I mean, it sounds kind of gross, but it actually means a lot more than that. It means that it's sort of an idiomatic term that He actually went and slept with his mother. So Noah fails to protect his wife. And this is a theme throughout Genesis, the failure to protect those around you. Adam fails to protect Eve in the garden because he doesn't prevent the snake. He doesn't guard against the snake coming into the garden. Cain obviously fails to be his brother's keeper. Lamech is even worse. The violence besets the whole world, and God brings judgment. And then here again, it resurfaces as Noah fails to protect his wife. And the idea here possibly is that Canaan then is the child that his wife bears with his son. And Canaan obviously then becomes a form of judgment, and that is what becomes the most sort of evil and corrupt area. And that's why God, when he sends Joshua in to destroy the Canaanites, it's because they are the most corrupt of people. And that's part of what we have to do is, are we looking out for one another? Are we guarding one another, protecting one another with our technology? Or are we distracted, as Noah became? There's actually a show called The Guild, and it's about people that play a World of Warcraft game. And there's one mother on there who plays the game and to the neglect of her children, and it's kind of awful the way because she's distracted by this game all the time. Her 4 and 5-year-old are cooking meals and doing all kinds of mischief because she's not protecting them. So in this sense, are we spending time with our kids? Are we spending time with each other? Or are we spending most of our time staring into our screens? Are we watching out for one another? And then the last form of distraction is Babel. Now, God called man to go into the world. And to spread, all right? Babel is an intentional, so they're building this giant city, in fact, to thwart God. They're building the technology. It's not just a replacement of God, but they're actually want to challenge God. Babel means the gate of God, that they're going to build it so high that they're going to breach the heavens, so to speak. And in that accomplishment, they are actually intentionally neglecting what God had called them to do. God had called them to spread and to multiply throughout the world, and instead they're uniting and living in one place and intentionally, according to the text, neglecting what God had called them to do as a challenge to God, which is why God then comes down and curses them with all the languages. And in some ways, we think of the curse as being sort of a negative, but this is what God intended. If you read chapter 10 of Genesis, he talks about this, these people lived in this place with this language, and these people lived. God intended that there be various cultures and various languages and diversity. Why would God want all this diversity? Why wouldn't he want this unity? Because the diversity that we find throughout the world is a reflection of the infiniteness of God. We see all the fish of the sea and the varieties. And only a God that is infinite and infinitely deep can produce such a thing. And he's producing that in the world, this diversity in us. So diversity is good. Obviously, we're still the idea that we will be a people that are united through Christ. But all right. Any questions? So these are the three things I just want you to take away when we're looking at how we use technology. Are we replacing God with technology? Are we becoming what we worship? And are we distracted from our mission? All right, let me close in prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for this day. pray that you give us discernment through your Spirit as we go about this week. In your name.